And welcome to Broken Open, where we tackle the question, how does one use pain to become? Rumi says that what hurts you also blesses you. Is that a possible thing? At Broken Open, we discern that it is. Not for everyone, but we like to talk to people to figure out why. Why some people are broken down by trouble and tough times, and why other people are actually broken open and they manage to flourish. Today, we're talking to Dr. Keenan Davis, and we're talking about reinvention. Reinvention and career setbacks. For me, reinvention and career setbacks are something that sometimes I've sought, but often, just like change, the status quo has to become absolutely unbearable before you hit rock bottom and you decide, yes, I have to do something different. In the pandemic, I think a lot of us have had to reinvent ourselves, sometimes by choice and often by necessity. And so Dr. Keenan Davis is going to speak with us today and tell us his reinvention story. He's going to tell us about his career setback, how he got from point A to point B. And let me tell you, little teaser, point B is a pretty great place to be. Keenan, welcome. We're happy to have you today.
I'm glad to be here. Awesome experience.
Can you tell us about the time, I think you were about 35 years old, and we won't date you now, so we won't say how long ago that was, but can you tell us about what happened in your life around that time, where you were, and how it was far from where you had been previously, and also far from where you hoped to go?
No, absolutely. And I don't mind dating myself because it's part of the journey. And I think that saying that I'm 44 and I'm 9 years removed from a situation that obviously could have broken me completely and I was able to escape it is one of the reasons why I think we're having this conversation right now. You know, at 35 years old, I was coming in a pendulum of my career in a sense that I just came off of an executive level role with a startup that allowed me to multiply my salary by 5 at 30 years old and put me in a situation, in a position that somebody from the hood never even thought was possible. I couldn't even conceive being in the conversations, in the character, well, in the content of certain environments that allowed me to move with people that I didn't even know existed. And so coming from 5 times multiplier of a salary, executive level, you know, $250,000 job at 30, managing over 200 people to hitting absolutely rock bottom at 35 was a traumatic experience. And it wasn't necessarily a self-inflicted experience per se. I know someone will say, well, if I ever made that kind of money, you know, I would be able to, I'd be set for life. Mm-hmm. When you don't come from much, as many people don't, when you get a little money, it's generally not specifically oriented just to you. Mm-hmm. You usually have somebody in your family, close family, that's in the same dire situations that you come from.
Yeah.
And so the money doesn't go far because it's being divided. It's not like when you see athletes or lottery winners, like, oh, you're a hermit. No, you have, you know, a mother, a grandmother, multiple brothers and sisters, maybe kids, family, in-laws. I mean, it just doesn't stop there. So albeit it sounds like, you know, I had a golden parachute of an opportunity, and I did, for me, that opportunity only goes so far, and generally it doesn't scale and permeate throughout the other people who you're closely surrounded with. Mm-hmm. And my situation was no different. And, you know, as the market started to shift and we had the historical decline, a global decline in 2008, that affected my life, and it affected my life in an extraordinary way. And so, you know, at 35 years old, I found myself coming off of food stamps for 6 months, $110 a week in Atlanta, Georgia. And it was a humbling experience. I mean, the fact that, you know, I spent all my 401k from being an executive with the National Football League, where I'd worked for almost 7 complete years, and I cashed that in. That was $42,000, and the penalty got it down to, I think, $33,000. And I lived off of that $33,000 for about a year, per se. And once that year was up, you know, I had business interests that I was doubling down on, that I was trying to see to the end. And I think that's the thing about an entrepreneur, Tawana, is that, you know, oftentimes entrepreneurs will lose the shirt off their back, sometimes flesh. Yeah. What that looks like is they don't have an IRA, they don't have a 401k, they don't have savings, because whatever that thing was that they had believed in so much, they put everything they had into that thing. And I'm no different. Yeah. You know, I've gone to the bottom of the barrel with the startups. And as a result, here I am, you know, now, well, telling a story at 35, having gone all in, didn't work, nothing left, $168.69 to my name. Now forget that.
So during that year, did you ever feel hopeless? Was there a hopeless sense, or did you always have hope and you maintained hope throughout that year?
It's a great question. I mean, I think there's a difference between hopelessness and helplessness. Mm-hmm. I never lost hope, but I felt helpless. And so it's a thin line between when you're looking around and all you see is demons. And we all have different mm-hmm. demons, right? Mm-hmm. Some of them are emotional, some of them are financial, some of them are physical, some of them are social. But we all have demons. And so when you're staring at or fighting your demons, you're either looking at them through two lenses. You know, do I have help to fight them? Or do I have hope within myself to fight them? Mm-hmm. And that's a two different, you know, that's a two different mentality, a duality of thought. And for me, I never lost hope that I could escape, but I looked around and I ain't seen no help. And that was a dark place, because not that I ever had help in a sense of navigating through life. You know, you always figure it out, find a way, find somebody that wants to join your cause and, you know, help you out, but mm-hmm. in some capacity, it's a dark place when you feel helpless. And so at 35, coming off the pendulum of what people perceive as success and being in the valley of what is often considered despair, you know what I'm saying? Money mm-hmm. is generally associated with despair. And so when you have no money, you have no access to get a vehicle to get the money, then unfortunately, you start to feel pretty empty, pretty broken open.
Did you have support? You didn't have help per se, but did you have any support? And I like to be transparent with the audience. And so I know Keenan personally. And so I know that Keenan is a helper. And I classify myself as a helper. And sometimes it's very frustrating, and very hurtful that there may not be anybody around to help the helpers. Help and support, though, aren't always the same thing. You know, somebody might not be in a position to help us in ways that we need, especially when it comes to finances, but they might be able to weigh in on our lives and be support. And we know that they're there. And that's also a comfort. So did you have support?
At the time, I met my wife.
Okay.
Wasn't, you know, my wife, but I met my wife. Okay. And, you know, she never made me feel less than a man, less than a human, that I was in a situation searching for a way out personally, scratching the surface to see if I had, to see where my next move was going to be. But certainly mm-hmm. she saw a man with pride, a man that had experienced some level of success in his professional career in multiple iterations in different verticals, sports and entertainment, the corporate world, startup experience. And, but he was broken. He was empty, and life had again attacked him in a hard place. You know, my mom's a single parent. She had me at 17, pregnant at 16, never met my father. So I come from a place of knowing what the struggle looks like. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the struggle my entire life. And so I'm not immune to the struggle, but it's weird when you escape it, when it takes everything in you to escape the mud, to get off the curb, get into the process of navigating life. Because it takes everything when you come from the hood, everything. You need every single lucky break. You need every fortuitous bounce, every opportunity to go your way just to have a shot at freedom.
Yeah.
And so to come from that place for the first 17, 18 years, escape that place, and then find yourself 17 years later, relatively in that same space and place again, it's humbling, it's deadening, mm-hmm. and it's not conducive for the mentality needed to continue to navigate the path of life. So my wife was cool, and that's why I think we found out she was the wife. Just because she gave me space
Yeah.
And, you know, Tawana, I got an opportunity to remove my pride and to see what I was really made of. They had an ad in Craigslist that was for my college foundation. I've never worked with universities. I'm a sports and entertainment dude, sports executive for the most part. And I'm looking at Craigslist because now I got to remove my pride,
mm-hmm.
right? You're no longer the former NFL exec. You're no longer the startup dude that got 5X salary, whatever. Mm-hmm. You're 35 years old. You're a grown ass man, and you got to figure it out because you'll have $168.69 mm-hmm. to your name. That's all you are. No pension, no 401k. You got bullets on the resume. But you got to go figure it out. That Craigslist said they were looking for an admissions, admissions counselor for my college foundation, a startup college funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Okay.
And I went to that interview dressed as if I was going to be the vice president of business development for my college foundation. I spent $8.50 at Staples to put my resume, cover letter, CV mm-hmm. references in a binder, clear top, black matte back, nicely kneaded, nicely mm-hmm. put together. I showed up to the interview in a loft space in downtown Denver, Colorado. Lisa Kendall was probably 10 years younger than me at the time. Brought me in and said, "Hey, how are you doing, Mr. Davis? Thank you for coming in." She looked down at my CV. She looked up at me and she said, "You're way overqualified for this job." Without response, without thinking, the hustler in me came out. And I said, "I didn't come here for this job. I came here to meet the person who started this company." She was like, "Oh, I can make that happen. That's easy." Went back in the back, had a couple of words, got my information and said, "Srikant Vasan will call you 2 days from now, such and such time to set up a conversation, lunch or something." 2 days later, I went out. She thanked me for my time. 2 days later, I went out. I mean, Srikant called me, said, "Hey, look," said, all I know is this. If that's what you'll do to get a meeting with me, we need you here to head up our business development. It's like, it's a startup. We don't have much money to give you, but I can pay you $7,500 a month and I guarantee it for 4 months. So I'll give you 30 racks for 4 months. I got $168 to my name. This man just gave me a check for $7,500. Yeah. So after 3 months, it was for four. So for 3 months, month three, I said, Shrikant, I know, you know, we're almost up with this engagement in a month. He's like, I know. He's like, I need to keep you. We need to keep you. We need you. This is vital with you. I can't see us getting off the ground without you. And I said, cool. He's like, but I can't pay you what you're really worth. And I know you're worth more than what we're paying you. You're doing us a solid. I was like, well, look, I believe in the mission and the vision, and I believe in you. I think we could do some great things together. So why don't you just do the best that you can do? Know that I'm not going to say no, because I'll rock with you. Mm-hmm. Just try to put me in a good position long term, knowing that you did your best on whatever number that is, and let's go get it. He came back with a 12-month contract at 9K a month. We had 108 after 3 months. 3 months, we're on the ground at 168, humbled, Craigslist. Go interview him for a $25,000 a year job. No disrespect to a $25,000 a year job at all. Just letting you know my story. Yeah. $25,000 turned into 108. Of the possibility of $25,000 turned into 108 in 3 months. Fast forward, 3 months into the 108, 6 months in total, Shrikant leaves the company. The other two leaders in the company leave the company. We haven't even gotten off ground yet. Next thing you know, I'm running the company. 6 months in, they moved me up to $13,000 a month. I'm at $156 a year. 6 months in, 6 months removed from $168. Now I'm making 13 racks a month. I ain't never looked back a day in my life, Tawana.
Wow. Wow. I need to take a pause with that. Were you all in from day one, from the minute you signed on? During that 3 month period, were you all in, or were you looking for other things that you were more qualified for? Or did you feel like this could be something and you were, you know, grateful for the opportunity, and so you were all in? What was your thought process at that time? What were you doing?
Coming to America, one of the most dramatic and poignant scenes, first one. Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, ice cold, presumably filming in Brooklyn. He's got all this money because he's, you know, Prince. And two homeless dudes sitting there arguing outside, presumably, again, it's winter, dead of winter, cold as hell. And he stops by them, puts a paper sack in their hand full of money. And Buddy looks over and says, Mortimer, we're back. That's how I felt when Shrikant gave me that $7,500 a month for 4 months. Felt like I was back. I knew I wasn't going to trick it off.
Yeah.
I knew I wasn't going to mess it up.
Yeah.
And I knew, I didn't know that I was going to end up running my college foundation, turning it into Mount St. Mary's University Online, taking a $3.5 million investment from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, getting it off the ground, having it acquired by the oldest college, all women's college west of the Mississippi, Mount St. Mary's University in LA, and working back and forth with the president and provost of that university for the next 2 years. I had no idea that I was going to have that engagement off of walking into a Craigslist opportunity for admissions counselor that was going to pay possibly up to $25,000 a year. A person who ain't never made $25,000 in their life. I had no idea that that situation was going to move me. And furthering that, it made me, being around these academics now. Now I'm working in higher ed. I'm building an online college. I done built an online college from the ground up, from a loft in Denver, Colorado, to a now online college that have graduated probably, I don't know, 10, 12 cohorts of students, because I was willing to put myself in a position that presumably was uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But see, I knew I was helpless. I felt helpless, but I didn't feel hopeless. As long as you got hope and you keep hope, you'll put yourself in situations that can be fortuitous. They can be promising. They might even be profitable, but you have to put yourself in those positions, and or you got to be willing to put yourself in positions to be uncomfortable. So I went back and got a doctorate degree because I'm around all these smart people or people who are smart. For real. Like, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, not the dullest one either, but I'm not the sharpest. But I'm like watching these individuals get a pass for being pretty much dull because they got letters behind their name.
Yeah.
And so I was like, wait a minute. You know, like I said, I got hustle in me. So you mean to tell me if I go get these letters, y'all gonna take me even more serious and not even know that I got hustle? You just gonna give me a pass? Okay, cool. Watch this. Watch me go get these letters from a real institution. You know what I'm saying? And go get it. So that experience also prompted me to go back to school, get my doctorate from Northeastern University, and continue to make myself even more marketable as a professional.
I'm going to back up a little bit, and I have one point and a question. So the first point is, coming from where you had come from and then going what you had just gone through throughout that year, you went for that $25,000, you know, job, putting pride aside, being humble, you're willing to do whatever it takes. The point to the audience is that $25,000 a year job, if he had just gotten that position, if Keenan had just gotten that position, that would have been something, one, that he was grateful for, right? Because he had $168.69 in the bank. And two, even that would have been something that he would have worked into making something else. But just being open to that opportunity led him to a whole multitude of other things that we haven't even gotten through all of them yet. So that's the point. And then the question for others who are finding themselves in this position and they have to reinvent themselves, what skills were you able to translate from your sports and entertainment industry into a startup in academia? What were you able to lean on? Yes, you have a hustling spirit. We've established that you're a hustler, but what skills had you utilized prior that you were able to translate and market towards this position, even if you had not yet been in this industry?
Skills that are transferable throughout business. Transparency, empathy, responsibility, trust, hard work, discipline, teamwork, and above all else, ethical. And so working in sports and entertainment, specifically the National Football League, one of the most recognizable brands in the entire world, I work with people across all kind of demographics, all kind of ethnic, class, social makeup that required me to be ethical. It required me to be responsible. It required me to reach across the aisle and work with different people from different backgrounds and be responsive and respectful every single day of my journey. Because it's such a recognizable brand and there's so many people who would work for free that my willingness or my ability required me to be perfect, or at least think I needed to be perfect as a Black man in it every single day. And that mentality of showing up every day and being perfect or thinking you need to be perfect, that's transferable.
Yeah,
because that's just straight up hard work. That's straight up common decency. And those things will always be highly respected and, you know, highly qualified across any vertical, any platform, and in any industry.
When people find themselves in similar circumstances such as yours, that place of despair, that valley that you were in during that year, sometimes they do give up because I don't believe they recognize the qualities that they have. Those qualities that you have, those things that you know to be true about yourself, those things that are good, right? Sometimes get outweighed by the demons that are on your back. And so what advice do you have to someone that just needs to hold on a little bit longer or needs to figure out how to make moves in the midst of, right? All about being in that valley and getting to the other side. what are some things that you did in addition to what you just, you know, described? Or was that it? Like, what advice would you give people if they're feeling hopeless and they're feeling helpless and they're kind of stuck? And you know, that's how people end up living with someone. That's how people end up staying in a relationship that's toxic because they need a place to stay. That's how, you know, people end up on the streets, going back home, leaving, you know, Georgia, going back to Arkansas, right? That's how people end up in those circumstances. So what would you tell them they can do? What would you tell them they can cling to, hold on to?
Now, that's a great question and a great way to bring home the show of broken open, because many of us are broken down. But you got to be open to something else. You have to be open-minded. You have to be open-hearted. You have to be open-souled, right? And that's what I love about the concept of your show, because a lot of people looking like broken, like you're broken open wide, like you're just raw. But there's also another side to the valley, which is a mountain. And that mountain often lives inside of us. And I think that it's truly up to each of us to tap into that inner power that we all have. And my story, as which we're talking about the business one at 35, you know, we have to come back to just the childhood one day where my first mountain that I climbed was just the childhood poverty. So I knew the survivor was in me, because I've already survived places that my demons died. Mm-hmm. I watched my demons perish as a 12-year-old, 13, 14, 15, 16. Man, I watched people get child molested as a kid. I watched the same misfortune turned on me as a kid. I've seen my demons up close in person as a kid. So for me, as an adult, to get into a dark place, that dark place, there's still a valiant fighter that's already fought mm-hmm. a good fight before and won. And I suspect that's the same thing in any individual, especially an adult. I'd be hard pressed to believe that there is an adult right now that's effed up, that's lowly in despair, and they can't find their way. The clouds are just hanging low. They don't know which way the wind is going to blow next. I would be hard pressed to believe that this is the first time in their entire life that they face the impossible, an unsurmountable comeback. I would be willing to wager a bet that they've already overcome a deficit before, but they got to find that person. And you find that person not on the phone with somebody else, not on social media, not reading a tabloid. You find that person in a dark place, in a closet, in a room, on a long drive, under a bridge crying. You find that place in isolation. And when you find him or her inside of you, you don't let go, because that's the way, in my opinion, that you come back. That's the way you fight off the opposition. That's the way that you ultimately overcome whatever that demon is that's got you strangled right now. And so for me, my dark place was my pride. That was my Achilles heel. And once I said to myself, okay, what's going to get you? Is your pride going to get you, or is Father Time going to get you? I chose the latter. The only thing that's going to take me out of this world is Father Time. But if it's something else that I have even a slight bit of control over, nah, it's a wrap. Not going to let that happen, because we all know, Tawana, that life is extremely short. It's fleeting. It's unfair. It's wavering. Mm-hmm. It's unpredictable. And it's going to come get everybody at some point in some time. So I try not to ever get too high when things look like it's nice and sunny. They're not trying not to get too low when precipitation is at its highest. And staying even keel has been the key to balance in my life, right? Even though right now things seem to be okay, right? Love is cool. Family is cool. Business is whatever. It's good. Okay. And what am I doing? What am I doing now to help other people? Like, am I taking advantage of the calmness in my own life? Am I planting seeds in other people's life? Am I helping them grow and nurture? Or am I living in excess and enjoying all the fruits of my labor while there are other people who could truly be using my experience?
Yeah.
I think that the most important thing for all of us that have, I wouldn't say checkmated this thing called life, because I certainly haven't, but are in a place where we have hope.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, right? I have hope. And because I have hope, I feel like I have, it's my obligation to extend my version of hope, my journey to those who would be willing to listen.
And I think that's the thing, right? You've got to put pride aside for a second and recognize that you don't know everything, not you specifically, but none of us know everything. And to always seek wise counsel. My grandmother told me that, you know, the grandparents' wisdom years and years and years ago, always seek wise counsel. And also to never be the smartest person in the room. And I'll tell you, in my 20s, I liked being the smartest person in the room, but that didn't help me grow. And you're speaking of literal and figurative dark places. This world is so filled with distractions. One thing that I know to be true is that if you allow everything to get quiet, even in despair, sometimes especially in despair, that is absolutely where the answers will come. This has been a fantastic conversation. Unfortunately, we're out of time. And so I want to wrap up with a little section called What I Know to Be True. And what I know to be true, in summation of everything that Keenan said, and also for my life, from my studies, from my observation, is that if you want to know what's possible, and if you want to know where you can go, you just literally have to look at where you've been. Because while some of us have had, excuse me, in quotation marks, easier lives than others, we've all had to climb a mountain. We've all had to cross a river without a boat, right? Maybe we had to make our own paddle. We had to bridge a connection. We had to figure it out. And I'd bet that you're still here because you did that. And so if you've done it before, you can do it again. Keep your head up. Keep your faith strong, eliminate that pride, be willing to be humble, ask questions, seek help, give back. And you can do it too. You can break open instead of breaking down. This has been a fantastic conversation. Stories of Survival with Dr. Keenan Davis, talking about reinvention and career setbacks. We'll see you next time.